First, overshadowed by the coronavirus, racial tension, and other news, the U.S. is taking new steps aimed at punishing China for its treatment of Hong Kong. Early last week, in a rushed and secretive process, China imposed a new security law that pretty much gives it unchecked legal power over the territory. China says it's needed to protect Hong Kong's economic development and political stability. Hong Kong residents and many in the international community say the law gets rid of any remaining autonomy Hong Kong had had under Chinese rule. In response, the U.S. House and Senate both passed bills penalizing China and those who do business with China. That's on top of moves the Trump administration had taken since the end of May. And that's on top of other areas of friction between Washington and Beijing. John Ruich is a reporter for NPR who covers China and Hong Kong. John, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for the invitation.
Before we get into the latest developments, John, can you describe for us this kind of unusual status that Hong Kong had had within China?
Sure. So the history is actually important here. And this is the issue that we're talking about is very fundamentally rooted in the history. And it goes back almost 200 years to when Britain took over Hong Kong as a colony in 1842. The territory that Britain held expanded. In 1898, it took over an area called the New Territories, which is across Victoria Harbor from the island of Hong Kong. And if you fast forward 99 years from that, you get 1997, which is when Hong Kong was returned to China with pomp and circumstance on July 1st. The key is that in preparation for that return from Britain to China, China and the UK signed a joint declaration in 1984 that laid out the terms of Hong Kong's handover. And the key parts were, number one, that Hong Kong would be under a governance model called one country, two systems, where the one country is China and the two systems are the mainland and Hong Kong, which drives on the other side of the road, has its own money, sets its own monetary policy, has independent courts, etc. And the second part is that Hong Kong was promised a high degree of autonomy for 50 years, basically that the Hong Kong government would get to manage its own affairs except for defense and foreign policy. And so that's sort of been the bone of contention here. There's been a sense in Hong Kong, even before this law was passed, that Beijing has been increasingly encroaching on its affairs in ways that it promised it wouldn't do under the joint declaration. And that's fueled protests over the years that last year boiled over into months and months of sometimes huge and sometimes violent demonstrations against this encroachment of Beijing's will on Hong Kong and against the government there.
And from the American perspective, the U.S. has treated Hong Kong differently in significant ways, including trade, right? What kind of things might we allow with Hong Kong that we wouldn't with the rest of China?
Yeah, exactly. So as the U.S. saw the handover coming in 1992, we codified in law that we would continue to treat Hong Kong as a separate entity from China in many ways, arguably the most important being trade. As you mentioned, there's billions of dollars worth of trade done between the two each year. The United States is Hong Kong's second biggest trading partner. Around 1,300 U.S. businesses operate out of Hong Kong and make it their regional hub. So for U.S. businesses and Western businesses, it's an important toehold in Asia. It's also been critical to the development of Hong Kong. I mean, Hong Kong for American businesses has been attractive in large part because it's of its access to China, but it's a place where there has been rule of law, independent courts, freedoms that aren't in existence in the mainland. That gave Western businesses a lot of confidence, but trade is probably the biggest area of difference between the two, between China and Hong Kong, between the way that we treat them. Hong Kong is its own, is considered its own customs territory separate from China. So there's a trade war on right now with China, tariffs on Chinese goods. If they're exported out of Hong Kong, there's no tariffs on them.
We're talking to John Ruich from NPR, looking at the U.S. response to China's crackdown in Hong Kong. John, what are the key things you've seen out of Congress and the president in response to China's actions now in Hong Kong?
Yeah, good question. I mean, the Trump, when China signaled in May that it was going ahead with this national security law, the Trump administration took steps to roll back the special status that Hong Kong has with the United States. I mean, the U.S. relationship with Hong Kong was premised on the city having sufficient autonomy from China. And Trump administration in late May said no longer. That is not the case. So they're rolling back special trade status, taking actions against officials deemed to be linked to the erosion of freedoms in Hong Kong. The State Department even issued new travel advice on Hong Kong, which had been seen as one of the freest, safest, most open places on earth, really. And Congress has taken action as well. You know, Congress last year during the protests passed the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, which was enacted in November by Trump. And that requires annual certification by the State Department of Hong Kong's autonomy. And it requires that they make recommendations on suggested courses of action. Congress has now also passed a sanctions bill early this month that would force sanctions on Chinese officials, and it threatens foreign banks that do business that supports Beijing's crackdown on Hong Kong.
How important is Hong Kong for China's economy and its financial system?
Yeah, Hong Kong at the time in 1984 when the joint declaration was negotiated, and certainly in 1997 when Britain handed it over, you know, Hong Kong was, it made a lot of sense for China to implement one country, two systems there, because Hong Kong was a huge part of the economy of China. It was a much bigger portion than it is now. And a large portion of trade from China flowed through Hong Kong and than it does now. Those numbers have changed. On the financial side, though, Hong Kong is a key conduit for hard money, basically for capital raising for Chinese firms and for access to dollars.
Is there any sign that what we've seen from the U.S. so far, the actions you just mentioned, is moving China away from this policy at all?
Good question. When China signaled that it was going ahead with this national security law in May, not only the U.S., but European countries, even Japan, some other countries around the world made it known that this would be a bad move, that it was a violation in their eyes of the joint declaration of Hong Kong's mini constitution, which is called the Basic Law. China basically ignored it. They were uncowed. They went ahead with the law. They even, when it was finally made public on the day that it was passed and ratified, people who had been paying close attention to it felt that the wording was even harsher, even more draconian than they had expected. So far, at least in the run-up to the imposition of this law, U.S. pressure and pressure from outside hasn't had much effect. We'll see what happens with implementation going forward, though.
There's so much going on. You touched on this already. We already have a long-running now trade dispute with China. On top of that, human rights concerns about largely Muslim minority populations in parts of China. And of course, the president blaming China for the spread of COVID-19. This is one more item on a long list of pretty big trouble spots between the two countries.
No doubt. Relations between China and the U.S. seem to be in a free fall. And every day, you pointed out four or five items there. Every day, there seems to be something new that's setting the relationship back. Experts that follow this and have followed it for a long time say the situation is as bad or worse than it's been at any time since 1989, when China rolled the army and tanks into central Beijing to quell protests there.
With all of this going on, what are you watching for next between the U.S. and China?
Yeah, I mean, on this law in particular, it'll be interesting to watch how China implements it, whether they take a really hard line on it or whether or not they're very selective with who they persecute under this. I mean, there have been several people arrested already. There have been some protests in Hong Kong. At least in one case, a person had a Hong Kong independence flag and was arrested under this law the day that it was implemented. So we'll be watching to see that. We're watching to see if banks and officials are going to get roped into sanctions here because of what's happened in Hong Kong, and whether or not that's going to lead ultimately to a flight of foreign business from there. On another issue, Britain, Taiwan, Australia, they've all offered a pathway out of Hong Kong for Hong Kongers who don't feel safe there under this new law. And the U.S. is considering a similar type of action. China's not happy about it, but are we going to see an exodus? Is there going to be a brain drain? I mean, that's a longer term issue. But that's something to keep an eye on for sure.
We will watch that along with you, John. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
John Ruich is a reporter for NPR who covers China and Hong Kong. We talked to them about the Trump administration's approach to the region after China passed a law cracking down on protesters in Hong Kong.